My guest today on the Introvert Ally podcast is Sam Horn. Sam is the CEO of the Intrigue Agency, a branding and positioning messaging consultancy, which helps people to craft winning sales presentations, funding pitches, TEDx talks, books, you name it. Sam's the author of Tung Fu, Pop, and the Washington Post bestseller, Got Your Attention, which have all been featured in numerous press around the world. Her books have also been translated into 17 languages. Clients include Intel, Capital One, Cisco, Oracle, Accenture, and Nationwide. Sam was the pitch coach for Springboard, which has helped entrepreneurs generate, get this, $26 billion in funding. And she's been brought in by TED Fellows, South by Southwest, Inc. 500, LinkedIn Learning, Richard Branson's New Now Leaders to teach people how to communicate clearly, compellingly, and confidently. Welcome, my friend Sam Horn.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer. I'm really looking forward to sharing some stories and insights with your listeners.
Well, you know, you are always a wealth of stories and insights. And I have to tell our listeners just because I always smile when I think about you and our journey together. And none of what happened for me in terms of my my book production and speaking career would have happened had it not been for you. So excuse me, listeners, if I get a little teary or a little emotional. No excuse there, but real quickly, Sam and I met through a mutual friend, a colleague of mine, Marilyn Mobley, who was Mobley. Yeah. And I remember Marilyn spelled her name with two N's, didn't she, Sam?
She sure did. Yes.
Who is a brilliant, like you, communications, public relations expert. And she, I was circling around some ideas to write a new book, and she connected us, and we had a lovely meeting, and you helped me figure out what my focus, what my niche or niche, as they say in Europe, was, and that was to support and advocate for introverts at work. I had been kind of moving in that direction, but you were the one to help me really narrow that down. So I'm so grateful to you for that.
And look how you ran with that ball. Look at the value that you've added and the insights that you have shared that resonate with introverts and they've been able to use for good.
Well, thank you. And it's been a learning journey, as you know, as you write the books that you want to learn from, right? And then the book wasn't out there and you had sent me back then. It was before I think even Amazon had hit the scene. That's it, maybe 15 years ago. And, you had sent me on an assignment, which I love bookstores. And you said, go to Barnes and Noble. And I want you to spend some time there and see what's on the shelf and what isn't on the shelf. And that was really what did it for me when there was one other thing. Do you remember? You and I were on the phone and, we both read USA Today, an article by a reporter named Del Jones who highlighted Warren Buffett and Bill Gates as friends and as introverted CEOs. And you and I both had read the article. Do you remember that?
It's, you know, that's paying attention to the zeitgeist. And, you know, there, we both knew there was a gap, right? There, this was not a saturated market. It was not owned by someone else. And when there's a cover article about two of the leading CEOs of our day and they're both identifying it introverts, it's like, bing, 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 Jennifer, do this.
I remember us laughing on the phone together. It was a zeitgeist moment. Yes. So thank you so much again. Such gratitude. And so we're not here so much to talk about me and my career, but certainly the newest, latest book that is sounds like it's a real culmination for you of many years as an expert communicator, coach, entrepreneur, speaker. You know, it's so many realms that you've excelled in. And when your name comes up, I often hear the word brilliant with it. So, it's true. It's true. You're able to take ideas and synthesize them. So this newest book, Talking on Eggshells, Soft Skills for Hard Conversations, love the title. You know, what prompted you or what motivated you to write this one?
You know, the intro starts with, I grew up in a Cold War, not that Cold War, my parents' Cold War. And they were very good people. It was just that my dad was emotionally distant and my mom was emotionally wounded. And they did not talk. In fact, I remember long drives, long evenings where they had stored so much hurt and slights, etc. They just didn't know where to begin. So they did not talk. And then I went to the opposite ends of the extreme. And now, once again, I'm not throwing my parents under the bus. They were honorable people. They taught us to do the right thing. They were really in integrity. And that's the dichotomy of sometimes, you know, whether it's introverts or whether it's, if we don't know what to say, we don't say anything. And then the silence grows and grows, and we do not know how to break the silence. And it just gets worse, and it causes such a distance and a. Now, the other end of the spectrum, I was in a relationship with someone who was very controlling. And I thought, you know, when he planned every detail of our dates, great. Oh, no, I did not know that that would end up turning into jealousy and character assassination, et cetera. And I tiptoed around that individual. And I, as more I looked around, I, as you know, I wrote a book called Tung Fu. Mm-hmm. And, I was doing a workshop on Tung Fu, and a gentleman who runs the front desk of a hotel said, Sam, everyone's so sensitive these days. I just constantly feel like I'm walking on eggshells because I never know what's going to set them off. It feels like I can't say anything right. I say everything wrong. And I said, oh, you're not walking on eggshells. You're talking on eggshells. Da, 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 da.
Wrote that one down.
Yes, I did.
One phrase that I love that you use that I always use, shared it, I stole it from and gave it to my class. I said, Sam Horn always says, if you think it, ink it. I bet you did that time. So in the times we're living now where people are very afraid to say what they think, and it is very relevant, isn't this book, to come to that?
Well, McKinsey says that rudeness is on the rise and incivility is getting worse. And you talk to anyone in organizations, and now let's talk about our personal lives. You may know there are families that are not speaking to each other anymore. There are sisters and brothers and longtime friends who have diametrically opposed political opinions, and they have just thrown away a 20-year relationship because they cannot agree on this, and it's become such a divisive issue between them.
It really has. And thank you for sharing too about the family influence, because, you know, you being vulnerable and talking about that, and certainly your parents did the best that they could with the tools that they had, right, at the time. But that really does shape, if we're not aware. One of the things you talk about in your book is, that I love the book, interpersonal social awareness, but it's also self-awareness. You know, wouldn't you say that we really need to have that?
You know, there's two aspects of what you just said, is that one, and by the way, I do believe in inking it when we think it. So if people have paper, unless they're driving, by all means, get a piece of paper and put a vertical line down the center. Because on the left, we're going to talk about words and reactions to lose. This actually creates a conflict, causes resentment and resistance. And then we're going to talk about what to replace it with on the right-hand column, and how we can turn conflict into cooperation, how we can actually turn resentment or resistance into rapport and respect. So what you've just talked about is that many of us have a habitual conflict style. And the vast majority of people are over on the left with avoid, accommodate, or angry. We either avoid it, here comes a conflict, I'm headed the other way, or we accommodate it, we give in to go along, or we get angry about it and we fight fire with fire. And this book, Over on the Right, really is about asserting, and especially with introverts who may find it difficult to have a hard conversation or to face a conflict. These techniques really feel right and comfortable and can help us have those hard conversations that we used to avoid.
I want to talk about some of those techniques, and you, I'm glad you brought up the introvert extrovert dimension. First of all, where do you fall, Sam, on that scale?
I'm an ambivert, Jennifer, because see, you know, I'm a public and a private person. You know, we're both speakers. I love being around smart, talented people. It's an intellectual Disneyland. And I also love my alone time, my solitude, and I like equal parts of both.
Right. And I think I've always guessed you're a little bit more skewed on the introvert just from knowing you. And knowing if you need that recharge time, if you must have it, typically you're a little bit more on the introvert side. So, but however you identify, Sam, is is cool. And it's interesting you said about introverts, maybe avoiding conflict. I think it's interesting that what I've observed too is that extroverts aren't necessarily, any better at handling conflict, but you mentioned the word like, being aggressive, or I think you said just like you either flash out or you repress. And there's something in between, right? That is where you want to be. So extroverts might express it, but not in a way that's productive because they're just sort of like riffing, you know?
That you just crystallized one of the core principles of the book is on the left is reactive and on the right is proactive. And the whole point of the book is in a situation, instead of being reactive, it is how to be proactive. Here's one of my favorite examples. I've got a good friend whose granddaughter has learning disabilities, and now she's in her 20s, and she got a job at Salvation Army, and she's actually been doing very well there. She's been able to keep this job, and she was very excited because her manager said, "You're up for promotion. Yay!" Well, the very next day, her manager said that she was at risk of getting fired. Now, before this, Brittany would have gone home and would have cried and would have perhaps even gotten depressed. She may have even quit her job. That she was being threatened to be fired was just so damaging and harmful to her. However, her therapist had given her four words. So Brittany went back in the next day and she said to her manager, "Please help me understand. Mm-hmm. Please help me understand how I could be, getting a promotion yesterday and in danger of being fired today." Well, then the manager told her that a customer had complained about her service and said that she was very rude. Well, Brittany remembered the situation. The customer had tried to bring in a used mattress with the cover off, and their policy is very clear. Cannot take back these mattresses with covers off. And she had diplomatically tried to explain the situation. Well, the customer didn't get what they want and they took it out on Brittany. Ah, now that the manager understood the situation, she actually complimented Brittany and Brittany got the promotion. Now look at the difference. Over on the left, when we retreat and withdraw, when we stay silent, it gets worse. Over on the right, "Please help me understand." See it as a clarifying conversation rather than a conflict. "Please help me understand."
I love it. I love it. And that's one that I have used because I learned it by observing bosses who I had a boss who did that. She had great phrases where she would say to me, you know, "How can I support you? Let me know how I can support." She'd say that in every meeting. And those phrases, and we call them, what's the term we use in speaking? The phrase that pays. I love that's what's so wonderful about this book, because you have, and all of your books are very practical. And this one in particular, I love because you do have these graphs where you say what not to do and then a specific tangible tool that one can take. So talk about, how did you gather these tools, these phrases? I always mention I learned it from a boss. What is this, just the sum total of your life and things you've been using effectively?
Well, you know, my life is my lab. And, I think, you know, I helped start and run the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years. And I do not read other people's books in my genre. And here's why. It's like I wake up at 3 a.m. and it's a great idea, but it's not my idea. It's Stephen Covey's idea. And I do not want my work to be derivative. I really want people to think, "I haven't heard that before. Yes. I can use that." You know, that's an I know that that's a real life example. It's not ChatGPT, right? So what I do is I interview people. You know, I interview Uber drivers, I interview waitresses, I interview leaders, I interview lawyers, teachers, and with their permission, I use these real life examples. And then I unpack it. All right, why did that go wrong? Elvis Presley said, "When things go wrong, don't go with them." How could we make it right? And then people go, "Oh, I relate to that example. I've heard that, seen that, done that myself. And now I know how to do it differently."
Mm-hmm. And your book is so conversational too. One of the things you recommend is that people actually take the book and use it as a guide, like as a handbook. Say more about how you see this
practical book. And I know I'm really being very effusive, but I truly believe that I wouldn't just be being BSing my audience. I think there's just so much that we talk about that's theory oftentimes, but your book is not that at all.
Well, thank you. You're making my day, because the neck up books, you know, someone says, don't let people get under your skin. Well, come on. We may agree with that intellectually. We don't know how to do it in real life. Yeah. So let me share one of my favorite examples. When I say my life is my lab, I'm constantly looking for these stories where someone has been a pattern interrupt, where something was going wrong and they said the right thing. They responded in a helpful way. So here's an example. I flew to New York and I was visiting my son, Andrew, whose son, Hero, was a year old at the time. So we're getting caught up in the living room. Hero crawls across the floor. He hauls himself up on a guitar that's on a stand in the corner and he starts pounding on the strings.
Child prodigy.
Andrew could have yelled at him. He could have yanked the guitar away. He could have said no. Could have said, leave it alone. All of those would have made Hero feel bad. Do you know what Andrew said instead? One word.
What was that?
Gentle.
Oh.
And you know, I saw Hero's face transform. And he reached back to the guitar and went strum, strum, strum. He reached up to some bells on the window and went ring, ring, ring. And in that moment, Hero made music. And it's because instead of shaming his behavior, Andrew shaped his behavior. So if people are taking notes, put shame on the left. And when people are doing something wrong, if we say stop, if we say don't, we actually reinforce the dreaded behavior.
Mm.
Over on the right, we say, you know, start doing this. What do we want them to do? We become a coach instead of a critic. We shape behavior instead of shame it. People learn from their mistakes instead of lose face. And as my dad said, you can't motivate people to do better by making them feel bad. And telling people what they're doing wrong makes them feel bad and doesn't teach him how to do it better.
Yes, yes. So this has real relevance to what the focus of our discussions are a lot on the workplace. So you kind of refer to that. So when you're coaching, focus on reframing it is what you're saying, to start doing these kind of things.
That's right. It's instead of, you know, you better, you know, stop being late. Don't interrupt me. All over on the left, no. Please let me finish. Please be on time for the meeting tomorrow. Instead of you're putting too much information on your slides, please limit your slides to 3 lines. Do you see how over on the right, we really are coaching people to do it right? Over on the left, we're just criticizing them for doing it wrong.
You know, we found in the research we did on effective introverted leaders was that they spent as much time, Sam, on these kind of issues that you're talking about or preparation about the person as they did about the project or the task. And I thought that was really significant. And it seems to me that even one can even write down these phrases. You know, so many of us on virtual calls now, like a sticky note on there with a word to say. I mean, that's helped me in the past. But I know that introverts in particular, because they resonate with that term preparation, that's one of their real sweet spots. I think that those part of what, going back to what you said earlier about avoiding conflict, it is like a muscle, isn't it? That the more you avoid it, the harder it is to actually have a conversation about a tough issue. Any thoughts on that?
Oh yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up. This is a skill, what we're talking about. We can learn, I mean, remember when we first started using a computer, where do our fingers go on the keys and how do I find that button? It was awkward, right? Well, we kept applying what we learned and now it's automatic. We don't even think about the keys. It's just, I get to tell one of my favorite stories that goes to how we can keep these ideas insight in mind so we can prepare for a contentious meeting. We can prepare for a tough phone call with a client who's upset. It's that I did some work with Kaiser, and a couple years after my training for them, I walked in and the receptionist looked around. There was no one in the lobby and she beckoned me over and she pointed to the words to lose, words to use reminder card that was still taped to her front desk. And she said, Sam,
you know, I was hired. This was in Hawaii. I was hired for my aloha. I'm a very friendly person. I never used to understand why people were so rude to me when I was so kind to them. Then I took your workshop. She said, I use all those fighting phrases on the left, you know, well, you'll have to talk to your doctor about that. You should have brought your insurance card.
It's our policy, right? That one is one of my favorites. Oh, I hate that one.
Yeah. And she said, now I have, it's a cheat sheet. You know, I get to, I catch and correct that word, buts about, well, I hear what you're saying, but, well, I'm sorry if you can't get an appointment, but, And, you know, and now she says, now I look forward to work because people are nicer to me because I know how to speak to them in a way that doesn't make them angry.
Yes. And I think you've talked also about just that if folks feel that you're listening to them, if they feel that you like them, that you respect them, particularly in customer service, you have found that in your research?
Yeah, I was very grateful. John Mackey, who's the founder of Whole Foods, said that talking on eggshells is the course correct for the cancel culture. And there is one little three-letter word, and it does cancel out what people said. We've already mentioned it. It's the word but. And if we're saying, I'm sorry that happened, but I know it's important to you, but it's, I wish I could help you, but that word, but cancels out what the person is saying. They will come back louder, angrier, because we're side against side, either or. The word and puts us on the same side instead of side against side.
Right, right. That's wonderful. So a lot of this sounds like it's almost like that assertiveness that we've talked about as a skill, as you said, you have to continue to work on this. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that introverts share with me oftentimes in an introvert, non-introvert friendly cultures, let's put it that way, is this concern that they're interrupted. And many extroverts don't even realize they're doing it, because what I have observed in the work that I've done is that extroverts communicate with each other that way. They don't take any offense interrupting. Part of this is cultural too, you know.
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if you have any thoughts about what introverts can do when they are feeling like, whether in meetings or even in networking conversations, when they're just really not being heard. They feel like they haven't even had a chance to finish their thought. Again, partly because the extroverts think, oh, they're done speaking, when they're just pausing, you know.
Boy, what you said is so, so true on so many levels. I really believe in being a pattern interrupt. As you just said, someone who's effusive or talkative or finishes your sentence or you're pausing and they rush right in, etc. If we just try to talk over them, often they'll get louder. You know, now we're both talking, right? So a physical pattern interrupt is, if you play sports, you make a tee with your hand. You say, hey, time out. Let me finish my thought, and then I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Or you even hold your hand up like a policeman would, and not in their face. I'm not suggesting that it's offensive. You don't put it in their face. You hold it up about shoulder high, because when you do a physical pattern interrupt, it does cause a pause, and then you pull a Kamala Harris, you know, as I'm talking, I'm speaking here, right? Or please let me finish, or I have one more idea, or one more minute to wrap up. We're very specific about what we want to do. And then we say, and then I look forward to hearing your thought, or then, you know, what I'd like to hear your suggestions on how we proceed. That is what I call proactive grace. It's not just grace, which is great, kind, compassion, empathy. That's wonderful. Especially in the work world, we need to be proactive, which means we need to make it actionable.
No, I love, you know, you're making me think about proactive. You said cause a pause. What did you say? You said
cause. Yeah, that's right. Cause a pause.
So, Sam, I have a question. Do these phrases come to you just naturally? they are very lyrical.
Well, I think you may know that I wrote a book called Pop, and it is how to craft titles and headlines and repeatable, retweetable phrases, because it's important to be original, and it's equally important to be memorable. So can I share a story about the power of a repeatable, retweetable phrase?
Of course.
Okay. You may remember years ago, the U.S. government was very concerned about car accidents, in particular injuries and fatalities. Mm-hmm. So they mounted a multi-million dollar public service campaign, and they called it Buckle Up for Safety. Well, that's clunky, right? It doesn't ring or sing. And Duke Ellington said, you can't. And so they went back to the drawing board. And this time I call it AIR, alliteration, iambic meter, and rhyme. And that's how we come up with hook, line, and sinkers that pop and that ring and sing. This time they came up with flick it or ticket. Jennifer, compliance went up, fatalities went down. They saved lives by crafting language that resonated, that people related to, and that they were motivated to change their behavior. So when I'm working with clients or speaking, I try to have these hook, line, and thinkers, these repeatable, retweetable phrases, because I know it dramatically increases the likelihood that people will relate to it, remember it, and want to act on it.
And what would be the connection to the person who might be listening to this, who is trying to figure out how to be more direct and concise in their communication? They may not have the poetic skill perhaps that you do, but what would you suggest to them in terms of a tweak they could make when they're pitching or when they're trying to be heard by their manager in the work?
I'm so glad you brought that up. So it's so now we're talking a little bit about not just saying something that's heartfelt, that's meaningful, that we want to get across. We're trying to craft it in a way that it actually gets a yes. So the Las Vegas Convention Bureau says this phrase has contributed more than $1 billion to the Las Vegas community. And that is, you know, if it happens in Vegas, it stays in Vegas. You remember, takes a licking, doesn't stop ticking, right? Yes. You may remember, I can't believe I ate the whole thing. So if we think, what is a change I want people to make? What is an action I want them to take? And then if you write that sentence out, and then if you start listening for alliteration, which is, bed, toilet, and shower, or Dunkin' croissants, no, it's Bed Bath & Beyond. It's Dunkin' Donuts. It's Dirt Devil. It's Rolls Royce. It's Best Buy. How can we use alliteration? How can we put it in a beat so it's easy to repeat? And then if there's a rhyme in there, we have dramatically increased the likelihood that if this person is listening to a lot of pitches, they're listening to a lot of projects, at the end of the day, we're the one they're going to remember. We're the one they're going to want a follow-up conversation with.
I love it. And you mentioned your book, Pop, and a lot of these techniques are in there. Is that right? I do recall that. Yes, I highly recommend that. But what was the subtitle on that book? Do you remember?
It's Craft the Perfect Title, Tagline, and Pitch for Anything. And, so let's go back to what you're saying. A work situation is that where this came from, Jennifer, is you know that I helped start and run the Maui Writers Conference for 17 years, best writers conference in the world, which is what Writer's Digest said. And these people flew in from around the world because you could pitch your screenplay to Ron Howard. You could pitch your novel to the head of Simon & Schuster. And I stood in the back of the room and I watched people pitch, and I could predict who was getting a deal without hearing a word being said based on one thing, the decision maker's eyebrows.
Oh, you and your eyebrow test.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And I forgot about that. That's the best. Tell us what that is.
Well, everywhere we go, people say, tell me, so what do you do? It's like, so tell me about your project. So why shall I fund this? Why should our board support this? I mean, if we have an idea, if we have a dream, if we have a project, if we want funding, if we want approval, we have 60 seconds to get their favorable attention. And most people, it's wah, 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 wah. And their dreams go down the drain. And it's not because the project or cause or idea doesn't have value. It's because they can't crystallize it in 60 seconds. Do you want one of my favorite examples? And everyone on the call can use this the next time they have something they care about. They want other people to care about it. They can use this 60-second opening. Want to hear it?
Of course.
Okay, here's the example, and then we'll unpack it. It's replicable three steps. Okay, I was the pitch coach for Springboard. We help women entrepreneurs get $26 billion in funding valuation. So Kathleen Callender comes to me, and she says, I got good news and bad news. I said, what's the good news? She said, I'm pitching to a room full of investors. I said, that's fantastic news. What's the bad news? She said, I'm going at 2:30 in the afternoon, and I only have 10 minutes. She said, Sam, you can't say anything in 10 minutes. How can I talk about our patent, about our financial strategy, our team credentials? I said, Kathleen, you don't have 10 minutes. You have 60 seconds. So here's a 60-second opening. Once again, I'll share the story. And then anybody, please be thinking, all right, I'm going to talk to my boss. I'm going to talk to the board. I'm going to talk to the PTA. Something that we care about, we want people to care about too. All right, so here's Kathleen's opening. Did you know there are 1.8 billion vaccinations given every year? Did you know up to a third of them are given with reused needles? Did you know we're spreading and perpetuating the very diseases we're trying to prevent? Imagine if there were a painless one-use needle for a fraction of the current cost. You don't have to imagine it. We've created it, and Whoa. She's off and running. Are your eyebrows up?
Mine went up right away when you asked that second question.
Okay, so everyone listening, over on the left, put tell. Never again tell people what you're going to tell them, or tell them what your idea is, or tell them about your project. That's an explanation, and explanations are infobesity. Go in one ear, out the other. They're confusing. Confused people don't say yes. Over on the right, ask three did you know questions with startling statistics about the problem you're solving, about the issue you're addressing, about the need you're meeting. So three, did you know this? Did you know this? Did you know this? And you're thinking, Sam, where do I get these startling facts or statistics? You Google that stuff. You know, we may have a whole bunch of people on the call, lots of different industries, problems. I guarantee if this was a workshop, you could go into search right now. Just put in, what are startling statistics about the pharma industry, about retail, about hospitality, about introvert, right? About, you know, the great resignation. You're going to come up with things even you didn't know. And if you didn't know it, your decision makers won't know it. And it's the quickest way to get a skeptical person's time. Next step. The word imagine. The word imagine pulls people out of their preoccupation. They're not distracted. They're picturing your point. They're seeing what you're saying. Link imagine to three benefits of your idea or cause or program. Go back to Kathleen Callender. What are her decision makers thinking about? Reused needles, we made it one use. Painful inoculations, we made it painless. Most decision makers care about money, so throw something about money in there. We set a fraction of the current cost. In a world of infobesity, we distilled her pitch into one succinct, who wouldn't want that sentence? Now to step three. You don't have to imagine it. We're doing it. And now you come in with your precedents and your evidence, a testimonial from a respected authority, an article in a newspaper, a case study from a client. Everyone else is still telling people what they're going to tell them. You have hit the ground running in 60 seconds. People's eyebrows up and they say, tell me more.
And the postscript, beautiful. Thank you for that lesson, folks. This is very valuable, as you can hear, beyond valuable content. Sam, what was the end result with Kathleen?
I'm so glad you asked that. Thank you.
Because it was a beautiful process. So I hope you got the money.
You bet. Now, and it gets better than that because this is so rare and welcome. Now, let's put this in perspective. Kathleen Callender of PharmaJet, she used to start her presentations and her pitches by explaining that PharmaJet was a medical delivery device for subcutaneous inoculations. A what? It was a what? She would have lost him at hello. With this opening, not only did she get her millions of funding, she was selected as Business Week's most promising social entrepreneur in 2011.
Wow.
So, do you see how when you do this, Jack Welch said, if you don't have a competitive edge, don't compete. Jennifer, if we don't have a competitive edge, we can't compete. And for everyone listening, think about the next time you care about something. You use this opening and your decision makers will lean in. They will be, they're much more likely to bet on the jockey because you just hit the ground running in a way that favorably impresses everyone who hears this opening.
Sam, you pulled from such incredible experiences. So where can people understand more about this last piece? Where can they reference that again? Because I know they'll play rewind on this podcast for sure. Anybody pitching anything, as you said. But was that, which book was that from?
That book is in Got Your Attention. And Dan Pink, you know, our colleague Dan Pink said that Got Your Attention, whether you're presenting or pitching or negotiating, you know, anytime, that this book is the best way to get people to earn people's valuable attention. And so the Did You Know technique with several other examples. And once again, the transformational bottom line shift of, do we have time for a quick other story about that?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Sean Keener, if we have any independent travelers here, Sean, it's S-E-A-N Keener, K-E-E-N-E-R, had come up with an app. Now, Jennifer, you remember in the old days, we had to have a travel agent to travel somewhere, right? We didn't book our own tickets, you know, and if you were going to a multiple city tour or European, you know, you had to work with a travel agent. Well, Sean really disrupted that industry and he came up with an app where you could book a multiple city trip yourself, you know, without the use. Anyway, so I helped him name the app and there's the Grammys and there's the Emmys. And so this was the indie and we came up with a 60-second video that he put on his website about, you know, did you know that you used to need a travel agent? Did you know it used to take up to 72 hours? Did you know that, you know, this
formula?
Do you know that he ended up, that did so well for him, he ended up buying his competitors because the little 60-second video cornered the market. It made so much sense. Why wouldn't you do that? He ended up scaling to the degree, once again, he ended up owning that market and buying his competitors because of a 60-second opening, and people would go, why wouldn't I do that?
Beautiful. And this whole idea about preparing your content, but also being real and being yourself, I'm sure his enthusiasm was in there too, has such relevance to our personality types too. So thinking this through, it doesn't have to be over analyzing it, but having a formula, Sam, and that's the kind of, you know, having some touch points that you always share in your books and now you so beautifully shared with us, sort of in person. I'm so appreciative. In terms of, two more questions. One is any other tips or thoughts that you have about, connecting this incredible content about talking on eggshells, speaking our truth to our personalities, to introverts? How can we, this podcast is about how do we, you know, really advocate for each other, for all personality types. How can we hear from the introverts?
You know, so let's talk about how when people make an accusation or call us, oh, so you're an introvert, and they say it in a dismissive way or something like that, that instead of being wounded by that, retreating, withdrawing, or arguing with it, that we have a much more proactive way of dealing with it. So once again, a quick story, and then we'll unpack it. I'm speaking at a women's leadership conference, and in the Q&A, a woman put her hand up and she said, Sam, why are women so catty to each other? Well, Jennifer, I'd heard that question many times before, and I decided it was time to do something about it. So I Don Drapered it. Don Draper from Mad Men said, if you don't like what's being said, change the conversation. So over on the left, if people make an accusation, do not deny it. Because if someone says, you women are so emotional. We're not emotional. Now we are, right? You don't care about your customers. We do too care about our customers. Now we're arguing with our customers about whether we care about our customers. You know, now don't get mad. I'm not mad, you know. So over on the left, do not deny it. There's two things we can do. Over on the right, redirect it with these four words. What do you mean? Well, you haven't said anything in the last three meetings. Ah, the real issue. Now we can
address the real issue instead of reacting to the accusation or the untrue statement. Now, another way we can redirect instead of deny is if someone says, you know, you don't care about your customers, you know, what do you mean? Why do you say that? Well, I left 3 calls and no one's called back. Real issue. What I did with that group is that I said, ladies, we're going to Don Draper this. Mm-hmm. We're going to agree never to ask or answer that question again, because every time we do, we reinforce that stereotype. We imprint perpetuated. So instead, you just go on record for what you do believe, what you do want. And I said, you know what? I think women are real champions of each other. You know, I wouldn't even have this speaking engagement. You know, it's like we both champion Marilyn Mobley. You know, we champion each other. So next time someone says something and it knocks us off balance, do not deny it, because it will imprint and perpetuate and perhaps even prove their argument. Instead, no, say what you do want to believe and go on record for, or say what makes you say that? Why do you think that? It will often reveal what's going on. We can talk about that instead of the accusation.
Love it. So that old open-ended question comes in once again as a way to change the conversation and to understand more and to respect the person by saying, could you tell us a little more about that? Yeah, right? So I love that. I love what you said about imprinting that negativity when you don't do that, when you do the left side of the column, right?
No, it's in personal life. You never listen to me. I do too listen to you. There we go.
And then we're off and running. No. We're off and running.
What? You know, yeah.
Wow, Sam. I just, you know, there's just so much here, as you say, to unpack, talking on eggshells, soft skills for hard conversations. So my last question is, how do you want this community, other communities to learn more about you and to connect? And we've just sort of hit the surface here of your incredible body of work. This latest one is so timely, Talking on Eggshells, Soft Skills for Hard Conversations. Who hasn't had to have a hard conversation and maybe avoided it or not known how to maneuver? Sam's book is for you. So Sam, where should we folks contact you?
Well, they can reach out to me at sam@samhorn.com. And we actually have those Words to Lose, Words to Use reminder cards. So if people want to get in touch, we'll send it. They can put it by their laptop. They can put it on their refrigerator. Keep these insight in mind and top of mind.
Yes. And it's as you say, it's practice. And I think we know that introverts really excel at that when they have a formula, and extroverts, I'm encouraging you to listen as well. And all of us can use these beautiful formats and formulas that work. Communication, as Sam has told us, Ken, it is an art, right? But there's also science behind it. And she's a beautiful example of that. Any last words you want to say before we click off Zoom?
You know, Mother Teresa said, the world is full of good people. If you can't find one, be one. And that's really my intent of the book, Talking on Eggshells, is that it is that we can be a pattern interrupt. We can set an example of respect so that people are motivated to respond in kind. And I really do believe that when we use these ideas, that we are being a good person in the world that is much welcome and much needed.
And Sam, you model that in so many ways. So it's really been a privilege and an honor to have you on the Introvert Ally podcast. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Jennifer.
That wraps up another episode of the Introvert Ally podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you found value from our podcast, we'd love you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. Also, please do share it with others. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.